So, Ruth, the other day in my class, there was this moment that I felt like I needed to text you about, like right afterwards. And we are super lucky in my school that our OT comes and does an intervention rotation with all of the pre-K and kindergarten at the start of the school year. And we were just finishing up our rotation with her, and she happened to walk into my room in the middle of like the start of a dysregulated moment for one of my little guys, Rex. And she saw Rex like was super dysregulated and kind of all over the place. And then another child became dysregulated and they collided. And like they just froze. They didn't really know how to proceed because neither of them did it intentionally, but one of the children ended up on the floor. And then other children were like, "Oh my gosh, you just pushed him to the ground." And they didn't know how to navigate it. And before I could help them, the OT kind of jumped in and helped them navigate it, and then turned and said, "Have you ever seen the video Unbouncing Tigger?" And I hadn't. So we watched it together, and then I shared it with you.
Everyone has tough days, but how do we talk about those days with our students? An occupational therapist recommends a video to open conversations in Becca's kindergarten class. This is Sticky Hope. I just thought it was so interesting, right? Because how often do we not catch it in the moment? And then just your willingness to say, okay, so we're going to process this as a class. And I think what I was really struck by was, you know, sometimes we think that they're two separate things, like social emotional learning and like literacy. And I think like what I'm really learning and seeing is how much like literacy skills are just embedded in this work of helping students process what's happening.
For sure. And I am like a literacy lover, right? So I am super intentional about including literacy, but I have just also watched how you can authentically tie literacy experiences into the social emotional learning, and it gives them something to stay grounded in as they're learning this really kind of abstract skill, right? And so Miss Kathy, our OT, showed us the video, and we just watched it the first time. I had never seen it, so I wanted to process the information. And then, of course, it was lunchtime and we had to get on all of our snow gear. And so off they went. And then I started texting you about it. And after they came back, we immediately watched the video again. But this time I was like pausing and talking to them about like, what did you notice? What are you thinking about? And afterwards, I turned on my voice recording on my phone because I always do that when I think something big is about to happen. And I said, okay, talk to me about what's happening. What are you thinking? What did you notice? And like so naturally, as beautifully as kindergartners do, my kindergartners just suddenly started talking, right? They noticed how Tigger was super dysregulated and how it was impacting other people. And then with a little bit of prompting, they were able to like then think about how the other people were feeling. And I could pull them back to the situation in the morning. And it was just this beautiful natural cycle for them to like then start identifying like, well, how do we help, right? Like, is it okay to be dysregulated? Absolutely. Is it okay to knock people to the ground even by accident? No. And so how do we kind of navigate that together? And they ended up coming up with this huge list of ways that they stay regulated and thinking through like sometimes when they're dysregulated, they need things that help to calm them down. And then other times they need things that help them find their energy. And that was the language they were using. And so they came up with 20 things and we started this whole sorting process. And we're still in the middle of it because it's really big thinking for them. But a whole bulletin board in my classroom has gone from just our mood meter and like 8 coping strategies to I think we're up to 30 coping strategies on the bulletin board and sorted by like how much energy they take and how much energy they give. And it's fascinating to watch them kind of process through that.
Yeah. Like you sent me the video, not the video, the audio recording. And I thought like a few things. First of all, it's this really classic Winnie the Pooh text. So it's Unbouncing Tigger. And we just loved it so much. And the conversation that ensued that we are sharing it. So we're putting it together. We're like, hey, how can we help other teachers have these conversations? And so Unbouncing Tigger is like a 2.5 minute video. Like, it's very short. And I love what you did, where you guys just played it and then you left, you let it settle for a little bit, and then you came back and you watched it again. But I think like you were talking about this beautiful unwrapping of what was happening, but it was this trust that you had in your students, Becca. So you were asking them things like, well, what did you notice in the video? And they were saying things like, Tigger didn't mean to hurt people. And yeah. It was like this, I think, a really important thing, because so often it feels, you know, like if somebody runs into us, it feels like, yeah, why'd you do that? You shouldn't do that. And like to understand, like to see it on the screen with these characters, like Tigger didn't mean to. And then in the video, he's really sad that he can't bounce anymore. And the way that your students were recognizing, like, this is part of who Tigger is. Yeah. And as a community, we can like, he can still bounce, but we're going to have to give some grace because he is going to be out of control sometimes. That's just the nature of bouncing. And I think like, so to be able to look at it in this story, this very fictional story, and then you said these words, you said to the students, we had a situation like this happen in our class today. Right. And there was just this pause before they started. Because it's like, wait a minute, like Tigger, this cartoon wasn't in our class, right. But yet we had this situation. And so I've been thinking a lot about how do we slow students down enough to be able to have those conversations?
Yeah. And it is super interesting. I always love to process with you because some of these things, I'm just trying it to see how they do it. And I know, because I'm in it with them every day, I know that they're going to come up with these amazing things, often far bigger than I am expecting them to. And so to remember how beautiful it is that they are slowing down and doing that thinking is a good reminder for me. And it brought me back to some research that I had read, I think, in undergrad about the way children's media is impacting their ability to like their focus ability and their memory. And so I was digging back into that research recently, and I came upon a few different articles, and we can link them below. But they talked about how in 1990, there was new legislation that came out that restricted the kind of media that could be put in programs for like directed at children, and it had to have a moral and it had to be seen as educational, and that was the only media that could be advertised to children. And the other part of like media in the 90s, right, was kids could only access it on like the living room TV, and it was like on one channel and Saturday mornings, and like that was it. And so they had very limited access. And when they did have access, it was like very intentional media that was like really thought out. It had a really strong narrative. It was intentionally slow paced so that children had time to think. Like there was all of this forethought that went into it. And then a shift came in around 2010 when like social media and devices kind of started to explode. And streaming services became accessible to kids, and they didn't have to follow the legislation. They could market directly at children and children's interests. And so if a kid gets to choose between like a really fancy character with all of their favorite things or like a slower paced narrative, they're going to choose the fancy character, right? And so that's where all the money was, and that's where production went.
So ironic. Becca, this is interesting, right? Because I'm slowly making my way through the Anxious Generation, and I think you're a little farther ahead than I am. But he talks about this.
Right.
Like that, just that fast-paced media is really changing. It's changing brains and how kids are processing, and we're seeing it in our class. So when we're coming back to some of these classic texts, it's almost like I don't even know if I have the words for it, but we're slowing students down in a way that they're not used to, because they're used to all these, like even the, like you were saying, just that how fast the scenes change.
Yeah.
It's just so much faster than what they've experienced, what we as teachers experienced when we were growing up. And like, as I'm reading The Anxious Generation, it's someone, and you've shared some of this research with me, is something I hadn't thought about, but really when I do pause and think about it, it makes a lot of sense for how kids are working and operating and relating to one another and to adults.
Yeah. And it's been really interesting. Jonathan Haidt in The Anxious Generation talks about how that shift in when the media shifted to streaming services aligns with when the children mental health crisis began, right? When their mental health started to decline, like, is when streaming services started to increase. And like, there are a million other factors in that with media and access to screen and just like the sheer accessibility that kids had to media and programming. But it is really interesting. And like, one part that I see play out in kindergarten all the time is kids are more irritable and dysregulated because they're used to things switching so fast that their bodies never learn to naturally regulate, because they're just getting so much input all the time. So they get dysregulated and overstimulated, and then they aren't slowing down to learn what to do with that feeling because another feeling's coming at them so fast. And the other part of The Anxious Generation that like really hits home with my style of teaching is the screens are replacing unstructured playtime. And so not only are kids like constantly being flooded with new information and new emotions and new excitement, they are lacking the experiences that naturally teach them problem solving skills, that naturally teach them how to stay regulated, that are building the core muscles they need to be able to engage in learning in the same way that kids 30 years ago used to. And it's been really fascinating to watch that play out. And like, even more so as I've gone through my career, like it's getting worse instead of better. And so when we take the time to have these conversations at the beginning of the year, like they don't know what we're doing. And slowly we're able to kind of get there because we do things like a lot of unstructured play. We do super intentional play workshop. We do a lot of things to build their ability to slow down and think while we're in the midst of bigger things.
Yeah. So this moment that we talked about at the beginning with Rex, we wanted to share with people Rex's story, because he had a rough day on the day that I was in your classroom videoing. And so we put that together. And then also this conversation, we just keep coming back and you keep having it with your students, that everyone has tough days and some ways into that conversation. So one is this video, and then some books. I know you're using books all the time with students, and it's that conversation. What are you noticing? And then the connection back to, hey, we had something like this happen in our classroom. And the things that they, like when we slow them down, the things they say are really insightful. And I think is positioning them, right, to be a community that learns. So then we can move into all that really important academic knowledge that we're building right alongside of you know, kids colliding and bouncing and having to pause and work our way through that.
Exactly.
So I'm excited about the Sticky Hope Kit.
I was hoping that was next.
Yeah. And it's like this little care, like I keep thinking it's like a care package that we're putting together for teachers. And we're going to include a link in the show notes. And if you're like looking for a care package, you're like, how do I engage in some of these conversations? We've put together just some of our favorite ways in, and we would love for you just to receive, right, this little hug, a virtual hug from us.
Yeah. And we're hoping, like, we really believe that everyone has a hard day sometimes, including us. And so when you're in one of those hard days in the midst of a sticky moment, we hope that you can click on our Sticky Hope Kit. And it feels like a hug from Maine and Indiana. And you remember you're not in it alone.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And if you'd like even more hope, check out our website, stickyhope.com, for tools, resources, and more. This episode was sponsored by Choice Literacy, a powerful hub of articles, videos, and resources for teachers by teachers.